Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good. It's an interesting background on of Earth. So I'm assuming this is our first recording from space.
Indeed, just going with the times.
Right. Well, obviously, this has been let's say an interesting week. Certainly from some of the action that was in Davos and things around with the Fed and obviously market reaction. So a mixture of geopolitics and central bank policy and kind of byproducts of those two things. So let's kind of dive right in as we like to do. Like, what were your big takeaways over the past week? Market reactions, are there medium to long term impacts of things that happened this week?
Ooh, possibly big impact. I mean, the market was very relieved by President Trump's announcement that a deal had been found, but we need to think a bit longer term. Reading the news this morning, there is a lot of talk of quiet quitting of US assets. So that's one possibility, one risk. President Trump would like a smaller current account deficit. It can be done in a good way by the US economy becoming more productive, more competitive, exporting more. That would close the deficit.
Right.
Or it can be done the painful way, which is foreign countries withdrawing funding from the US, which would bring down growth and imports and shrink the deficit. So there is a bit of a risk that, the events this week have triggered a sort of reallocation away from the US. So that's something to watch for. The other risk, of course, is that even though markets are reassured and think, there is a deal, actually we don't know. If there is a deal that the Danes are not happy with and think they have been actually perhaps thrown under the
Thrown
bus,
under the bus.
yeah. And
Exactly.
the risk is NATO unity, and since NATO is such an important institution, keeping Europeans together, there could be some consequences for European economic institutions, the European Union, perhaps even the Eurozone. So basically, we don't know what the long-term consequences are, and it could be that markets are a little too quick in thinking that the crisis has been avoided.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And we've seen this pattern over and over where there's something extreme, the relevant parties kind of panic, then Trump kind of walks it back. But then there's still a lot of stuff to be dealt with down the road. But the market certainly seems to think that this is kind of it's at least this issue is probably passed. But I guess let's see. What did you mean by quiet quitting U.S. assets? You mean like the stuff that was earlier in the week when people were talking about like European asset manager pension funds potentially cutting some exposure
No.
or something else?
No, not in a retaliatory manner and not limited to Europe. But basically, what I'm reading this morning is stories about asset managers all over the world looking again at the share of US assets in their allocation. Some of them are talking about, the US economy is slowing, so it makes sense to reduce the share of the US in my portfolio. I don't think, anyone wants to say anything belligerent or anti-US, so it's more that reallocation decision are described in terms of relative economic performance. But behind this, and it was also in the news, you get a sense that people are concerned about the directions the US is taking and just trying, I mean, reallocating long term. So I don't see it at all like a short term retaliation or short term aggressive movement on the part of European investors, not at all. More a sort of a global, more gradual, and longer term move away from US asset, which would be negative for the dollar. So we could be about to start another down leg for the dollar.
Right. Some of which, like, yeah, some of those movements we saw over the last year or so, where, let's say, the middle income countries or more emerging countries were questioning kind of the safety, I guess, of holding US assets, following what happened with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And this would probably continue some of that. So not just a specific European thing. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's something to watch. I guess on the flip side, it's still US growth is seems to be quite strong. And obviously there's a massive AI infrastructure bill, which is probably sucking up a lot of investment. And then I guess we'll see if there will be more, a lot more manufacturing outside of AI coming back to the US. But I understand, you know, your point.
Well, you know, I've been skeptical about the growth data in the US for some time. The AI investment is very import intensive. There doesn't seem to be much CapEx going on outside of AI. And historically, whenever there has been a conflict between weak employment data and strong GDP data, typically it's the GDP data that has been revised. I mean, alternatively, there is a risk that, you know, we could be going through a productivity spurt, which is why we have fewer people producing lots of stuff, lots more stuff. That's basically what productivity is about.
Right.
But then there is a conundrum for the Fed because the latest wage data shows wage growth at 3.5%, which is bang on the Fed, what the Fed considers consistent with its inflation targets. 2% inflation, 1.5% labor productivity growth, which has been the historical average for the past 50 years. Now, if productivity is instead 2.25%, which is what we've seen for the past 3 years, then wage growth is too low. And since wage growth in the long term tends to drive inflation, right? We are in a services economy. Actually, if there is an AI driven, or if there is a productivity acceleration, whether it's AI or other things,
Yes, I
we
agree. Yeah.
could be at risk of inflation undershooting. Undershooting
Undershoot, undershooting.
the Fed
Right.
target.
Right. That and that was, I remember you had, yeah, kind of surfaced that. I mean, so far it has been fairly tame. Yeah, so obviously, you know, you run a lot of like individual models yourself. Do you see stuff in the analysis that you're doing that, let's say it could be because of AI, you know, but that actually that there are stronger disinflationary effects and the market is maybe not aware of it or not
Oh,
say, focus on it.
very much so. I mean, just look at the PCE number we got this week. There is one type of PCE that the Fed likes to look at. It's called market-based PCE, and it excludes all the prices that are not directly observed but computed, like the cost of portfolio management. It's 2.5%. The Fed thinks that the impact of the tariff is about 50 to 75 basis points. And as you know, the impact of the tariff is fading. As I thought, the tariff lifted the price level, but not the inflation rate. I think even the hawks within the FOMC are finally admitting it. So it means if you exclude the tariffs, we are already back to the target, perhaps even below. I think the Fed will want to see what the January, February PC data is going to be, because we always have, I mean, we always have, we've had this residual seasonality at the beginning of the year, where inflation is higher than inflation, the disinflation seems to pause. So I think they want to see how, the data shapes up. But if we have continued disinflation, I think they'll cut.
Okay. So one. Th so th there may be a seasonality effect that is not being picked up, and it was also like, hasn't payrolls been really strong in the last couple of Januaries too, or?
So the last payroll data was better. So it was, if you will, a one data point going against the trend. But again, I think people
Could be.
overestimate the strength of the labor market. So this week I published a note showing that the decline in continuing claims reflects people losing access to benefits, because in the US, benefits last only for about 26 weeks. We are in a low hire economy, so unemployment duration is going up, and so that's why the claims are going down. If you look at the job finding rate for the unemployed, it's still going down, and it's very, very rare that during an expansion we have an increase in unemployment duration. So things are not adding up there.
Should we go on to the next potential Fed governor and Powell's next move? And
Sure.
okay.
So there is this. So first of all,
First of all, you guys wrote a great piece. It maybe kind of touch quickly on that.
sure. There's these four candidates. The vacancy opens in May, but President Trump he could announce, has said that he might announce his choice as soon as next week. According to the prediction market, the one in pole position is Kevin Warsh, who is a little bit of an unknown, possibly a bit more hawkish than the other candidates, but we don't really know. To be honest, I remain a bit skeptical that the chair will make that much of a difference, because even Kevin Warsh, I think, is going to set policy according to the Fed mandate, stable inflation and maximum employment. Policy is an art, it's not a science. So within that mandate, there is room to be a little bit more on the hawkish side, on the dovish side. But I can't imagine that he would move beyond the mandate and, for instance, run the economy hot. Then there is the issue of getting the vote. The chair is one of 12 people who vote on the policy decision. So the Fed has this very long established tradition of consensus, by contrast to the Bank of England, where at times the Monetary Policy Committee has voted against the governor. But what you could very well see is that if we have a chair that is not sticking to the Fed mandate, he gets outvoted by the governors, and the risk is especially high if Chair Powell decides to stay on when his mandate expires. So to be honest, in this thing, I think President Trump could be his own worst enemy, because it looks to me like just by sticking to its mandate and looking at the data, the Fed has to cut the attacks on the Fed independence out, a bit of a distraction, it seems to me.
Everyone says that, but at the same time, like, they have been cutting, and okay, inflation's not going higher, but it's pretty stable. Anyhow, So, and I saw you, it was an interesting thing where you guys, and I would recommend all our clients to kind of read the full piece going through what the, you know, obviously what the interest rate and curve impact will be for each of the potential four candidates, and also obviously the effect on the dollar as well. And as we all are, I guess you just keep watching Polymarket until Trump does announce it, which is amazing. So, but it's a good point that you're raising that, which I don't hear that many people talking about, like whoever they choose, it's a question of how much power that they will have. And even if they had that power, like how they will use that, because there are infrastructure around that. And then also the big question is, just does Powell stay on? And there's so far these attacks doesn't seem to be encouraging him not to stay on. To not stay on. So if anything, he may just say, I'm going to stay on for 2 years until I feel like things are completely safe and I have responsibility to the, I mean, what, you know, whatever, even though he was originally chosen by Trump. So, okay, so to move forward for next week, is there any particular economic data? Are there any big events? You know, obviously there will probably be some surprise events, but like
So
preset.
data-wise, it's a light week. The main event is the Fed.
Yeah.
There's no surprise there. It's not a SCP meeting. We know they are on hold. I think three things to look at, obviously how they characterize inflation and whether they have any specific comments on this wage growth, which, by the way, I think they should be really worried about, because ultimately what supports the Fed independence is support among Congress and among the public. So if it turns out that inflation undershoots the target because they have not eased enough, they will lose a good deal of credibility, and this will make them much more exposed to
Right.
administration attack on their independence. So let's see what they say about wage growth and unemployment. There are two things they are dealing with. So this issue of the productivity growth, the inconsistency between employment and GDP data, and whether it's a case of productivity acceleration or a case of mismeasurement. So what Powell says, you know, where he's looking for signs of either scenario playing out, that's super important. And then the other aspect of the other conundrum on the labor market is really this balance between demand and supply. We know that supply is going down. I mean, the administration says that last year they deported 600,000 illegal migrants, and 1.9 million migrants decided to self-deport. So that's 2.5 million people. Let's say, you know, 3/4 of those were working adults. We're talking about a decline of 2 million in terms of the working
Yeah,
population.
it's a lot.
This is huge. But we don't know. We don't know. We don't have good estimates. So the Fed is really focused on the unemployment rate much more than on the level of employment, precisely because we don't know what supply is. So they have to focus on the balance between demand and supply. So it will be interesting to get Chair Powell's take on what's happened to labor supply and to what, in my view, is the biggest economic mystery of all. How can we have a 2 million decline in the working population and we still have slower wage growth? That's amazing. And that's another reason why I think the economy is actually quite weak.
And kind of market reaction. Obviously, there's other factors going on. Everything was around Greenland. Obviously, you had for a while a pretty significant sell-off in Japan that may have been spooking the long end in other markets. Are you surprised how the, I mean, it's still not the moves are not that massive, but I know volatility is definitely going up in the treasury market a bit. Maybe it's softened now, but 10-year at 4.2, 4.25, a little bit less than two cuts. I mean, just in general, does that feel right to you?
No, I think the market is underestimating the extent of the disinflation and of Fed cuts. So I am at three cuts this year. The market is moving and reacting very much to short-term data, like the December LFP, which again is just one data point. We need more. I mean, at least I need more to have a view, to change my view.
My old colleagues are calling for zero now, right? Isn't JP Morgan saying for no cuts?
Well, I cannot explain why they are calling for no cuts, but I can explain why I'm calling for three cuts. I think disinflation is going to surprise better than expected, and I think growth is completely, there is a problem with our growth data. I think it's completely overestimated.
Yep. Okay, cool. All right. Anything else or?
No, this is the main thing. Let's see what how this Greenland deal shapes out,
Fine.
and let's wait for Chair Powell's comments.
Right. We have Iran, there's the talk of US sending more kind of military equipment to the region. So there's that too. And we know that the US has, or Trump certainly has announced things post close in stock market on Friday. So okay, cool. Well, wishing you a lovely weekend and obviously all of our clients, a wonderful weekend as well. And like we say, well, first of all, I want to make sure everyone knows about all our expanded service. So if anyone has any questions, post our acquisition, obviously it's now been kind of 4 months since the post acquisition. We're really kind of ramping up the capabilities on the kind of trading and sales side. Also, you and others in the strategy team have put out some amazing pieces this past week. I will say one of the best weeks I've seen in a really long time. So, any questions, reach out to us and hope everyone enjoys it. As always, we both like to say, any interesting feedback, please shoot it over.
Please, yeah, negative feedback, especially helpful.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Good luck, everybody.